Hi, I'm Life Coach Mama, a life coach for moms who want to find more joy and more peace in their marriage and in their parenting. My husband and I have 8 kids. We love having a big family and often hear the phrase, "You've got your hands full." Come and join me as I interview moms of all ages and in all stages from around the world. Be encouraged, find inspiration and confidence that you can handle another kid. And if this is a topic that interests you, please check out my book, Have Another Kid Without Losing It, available for purchase today on Amazon by Lauren Loboda. Welcome back. This is Lauren, and I have with me today my good friend Ashley. Ashley and I met through our parish. Our husbands were in a men's group together. They were in Kingsmen, and we really got to know each other when my husband and I were looking for couples to sponsor students from Rwanda that our charity was bringing here to the U.S. to study and to live in a community, to have parents. And so we had approached Ashley and her husband, Adam, so thought they'd be perfect candidates, and they were already thinking about it, about taking in a Rwandan student. And so that's really how we got to know each other. Ashley, if you could just start wherever you'd like on your journey of adoption, infertility, and fertility.
We struggled for 8+ years with infertility. And then it's amazing how like God directs you down a certain path, because once I was thinking to myself that that door of biological motherhood was perhaps closing, and I'm not that old, but
you're younger than me, right?
Maybe like a month. I don't know.
Maybe you're young.
Yes. Okay. So I remember this really clearly. I was driving home one night and I was like, you know, I'm totally open to whatever type of motherhood God calls me for. And it just so happened then that we read a letter in the church bulletin about taking on students from Rwanda. And lo and behold, we had our daughter. And she was 16 to 24. She's an amazing young woman. And anyway, so
well, I just want to say a little bit more because I don't give myself enough credit. So Adam and Ashley, such a great couple, so committed to their faith. And not only, you know, realize like, oh, the couple that, you know, they want to have kids, but they don't have kids yet. Oh, they're so good with teens, which is another thing, because we did tend to go to the adults who are older, who had young adults or older adults, because they had already done the teen thing.
Yes.
Because not everybody likes teens, unfortunately. It's just reality. Or that's understands true. Teens. Or maybe is like, can't wait to have a teen.
Yes.
Like, oh, I'll volunteer for that. And you guys, you know, had been, gosh, doing Life Teen ministry for 10 years.
Well, I
you guys were
like,
very committed.
At a certain...
I got all the years wrong.
Yeah. No, because I don't even know how many years we did Life Teen.
Yeah.
But I want to say, like, when Denai started to... When Denai came into our lives, we were probably on like year 3, maybe somewhere in there. Life Team was such a big part of our lives. And actually that was also part of our decision-making and how we got to where we were with, you know, bringing Denai in, our daughter. And because we met some of the Rwandan kids through the Life Team ministry.
Right.
So, and it just was like meant to be. But I feel like once we started to kind of like open our hearts to parenthood and ministry outside of putting ourselves up to really God's will and all of this, then I think it's more along the lines of, okay, you're ready or you're prepared. Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, see what I've got in store for you, basically. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest things I think with infertility that people really miss is it's like the Band-Aid. Mm-hmm. You're given a Band-Aid for this gaping wound that you have.
Yeah.
And the Band-Aid doesn't necessarily heal the wound. It maybe stops it from bleeding, potentially stops from getting infection, but it doesn't actually solve the problem. And so a lot of doctors we were seeing were just wanting to give us the Band-Aid, you know, and wanting us to do in vitro fertilization or insemination. And those are all things against the Catholic faith that we didn't want to do. And then we started to dig in, okay, well, why are we experiencing this infertility? Let's just solve this problem. So that way we can be healthier, better versions of ourselves. If we get pregnant along the way, you know, wonderful. And that was something that Danai really wanted too. I think in some ways she felt pressured, you know, that she was the only child and all of our focus. And she kind of laughed about it and joked about it, but we're like, it's really true. So I know that was something she really wanted because she really wasn't around a lot of babies, but she's always had this affinity for younger kids. And so kind of with our fertility, we ended up seeing a...
Was it a nephro doctor?
Yes, thank you. That's exactly what it was. And those are few and far between, but I really feel like they're the best route to go because...
Did you have to go, like, did you have to Zoom someone or telehealth far
No,
away?
I actually ended up making the trek to Wadsworth, and it was like over 45 minutes. But then... you know, I really appreciated the information the doctor was giving us.
Because it was worth it.
And we did a series of tests and we learned how to do the Creighton method.
Well, so few doctors are knowledgeable. So it's so unique, unfortunately. And even in med school, I learned from friends that they don't even like touch on NFP. I mean, it's one thing to say, you know, this is what this culture does or this religion or, you know, I mean, I know they, all it is just, you know, calendar. I'm like,
and that's
like 60 years outdated. I was like, med school, that's ridiculous. You should know this.
They still think of it as the rhythm method. And you're like, no, that's not what it is. Like you're actually looking. And so now, like, I don't know, like, I don't know if you have an Apple Watch or, you know, so smartwatches, they, you can now use apps on your smartwatch connected to your phone to track your cycle. And so I've been doing that. So it's on the period tracking apps now. Talking about the fun things like cervical mucus and basal body temperature and things like that. So it is starting to come into more of a popular.
I think people want to be more green and natural and organic. And then people realize what it, with infertility, it helps.
Well, and even there's a writer, Nicole Jardin, and she's known as, I think, the period girl. And even like more secular mainstream Instagram individuals like her, she wrote a book called Fix Your Period. And it is so interesting how she talks about infertility and she talks about all the different things that and conditions that could be treated outside of hormonal birth control and, you know, what damage that does to your body. But anyway, so with that, so we learned how to kind of do that. And then we made...
So no one had really even offered that as an option.
No, no. We had to find it on our own.
And they didn't even say, you know, what's leading to your infertility. They're just like, yeah, you're infertile. Here's in vitro.
Yeah. Or here's Clomid. Here you go. Take this.
So there was no discussion about, and we live by University Hospital Cleveland Clinic. So, I mean, we're in good care. But
there's so many crazy that good doctors out there.
They didn't even ask, like, are you?
Absolutely. And I had no idea what my fertility diagnosis was other than unexplained infertility. That's literally what my diagnosis was. Unexplained infertility. So the doctor that I was seeing in Wadsworth, she made a referral for me to get some sort of an ultrasound of some of my uterus just to kind of see what was going on. And
you're like,
nobody else did that.
Yeah.
You know, I had a Hissling saplingogram and those are painful. And they did have some imaging of my uterus and that was a long time ago. So they wanted to do the ultrasound. So we did it. And then they thought that they could potentially see some polyps in my uterus. So then they wanted to do a procedure where, you know, potentially removing that, thinking maybe that was it. But I went to a special OBGYN for that. And she's absolutely wonderful. She's now delivered or been a part of, you know, delivered one baby, been a part of three pregnancies. Spoiler alert. She's asking me if I could potentially be pregnant, you know, where I was in my period. No, that's not it at all. I'm not pregnant. I'm never pregnant for 8 years. Yeah. So to me, I don't feel comfortable doing this procedure because if you are pregnant, it could be a potential abortion, like without you just really thinking about it. And of course I was like, well, we don't want to do that if there even is a percentage of it.
Right.
And we just started talking to her and telling her what our values are. And what we were looking for in a doctor, and she completely agreed with us. She said, listen, I have a lot of Orthodox Jewish and even Christian patients.
Okay.
And I would totally respect whatever you wanted to do as my patient. We can work together. I have a feeling, I have a good feeling about this.
Yeah.
She said, we're going to have a baby by the end of this year. And I was like,
So she was mainstream.
Okay. Yes, okay, but then she was very much, let's figure this out. Good. Let's work together.
So you took a pregnancy test, I guess.
She didn't do the procedure. She prescribed metformin because I was diagnosed as having polycystic ovarian syndrome. Mine is more just along the sides of some polyps and insulin resistance. So my body creates this insulin for sugars and doesn't know what to do with it. Mm. And so that causes problems with infertility. Mm. So she put me on metformin, and metformin helps control your sugars. Mm. It helps control, it's a bit of an appetite suppressant, but we found out later that it helps women with polycystic ovarian syndrome maintain pregnancies throughout the first trimester because it helps with the progesterone.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, I know that date exactly that we saw. It was February 17th, 2018. I started taking it that day, and I must have conceived my four-year-old Hannah within that time period. I called them and I spoke directly to the doctor, and you know that never happens.
Yeah, yeah.
And I told her, I said, hey, I took a pregnancy test and I'm pregnant. And she was like, what? She's like, this is crazy. I just saw you like, you know, 3 or 4 weeks ago. We were just talking about this plan. And, you know, so she's like, okay, I want you to come in, did a blood test. She called me that afternoon. She's like, you're pregnant. She's like, this is crazy. She's like, okay, so you're going to come in again, like in the next week, and we're going to do an ultrasound. So we did an ultrasound, and sure enough, there's Hannah like kicking along. And so we finally, we were like, okay, we need to tell our families. Yeah. So Adam calls his dad and his mom, and he's talking to his dad and tells him, you know, hey, I've got some great news. Ashley's pregnant. And his dad goes, I know. Like, how do you know that? How do you know that she's pregnant?
That was his answer.
Yeah. He was like, how do you know that she's pregnant? And he said, because he did a novena to Our Lady and Doer of Knots. Wow. And then he said, it's twins, right? And we went back to the doctor's office and had to check again at the ultrasound. Because we're like, this is really weird. Can you check? Not twins.
Our dad's been doing some novena. And
yeah.
I don't know, like.
Yeah. It was so crazy. Like everything about parenthood changes, like your perception, you know, what you think and what you do with your child. And for so long, I'd put my identity in work, and I ended up actually becoming a stay-at-home mom. Mm-hmm. And for just a long time, like I always thought, oh, I'm not the person that can stay home with my kids. I just need to go, 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 go with ADD. It's like, you just go.
But you are going.
Yes. It's a different type of going, but I think I felt guilty that I wasn't working. And that's such a misconception.
Yeah. Well, you are working, but you're
not in the same
working outside the home, way. Getting a paycheck. Yeah.
Because the fact of the matter is, with childcare being so expensive, I would have just been working to pay for the childcare worker's salary.
Yeah. And I always laugh with other friends who are stay-at-home moms when they go to do their life insurance policy. It's like, you know, the husband knows his because he knows what he makes.
Yeah.
And then they always ask, well, what about the wife? And
yeah.
They're like, oh gosh. Like, okay, I'd have to hire someone to do X, Y, and Z. And they're like, no, granted, maybe you don't make, that wouldn't make as much as the husband, but you really don't, you don't get the value because you don't have a price tag. You don't have a mm-hmm. check coming in. And like the kids are like, well, you don't make the money. And I'm like, you guys, if I worked, there would be a lot of money being spent.
it's the support of it. So uh-huh. It's the support of it, of the fact that he can work because you are working
right.
here.
Yeah.
In the other sense, right? So like.
And then of course you're with your kids because you want to, you know, be yeah. there and have that relationship. It's not like yeah. a money thing, but.
You also get to see all the milestones.
Yeah.
yeah. like that's the fun part is like mm-hmm. you get to see the milestones and then tell people later, like Adam. like message me or something if I'm in the next room, or you know, yell for me, hey, Max is doing this or that, or you know, Leo just rolled over. I'm like, yeah, I know, he did it earlier today. Like, you know, but it really, it is important. I think our culture does such a disservice to young women right now, where they're putting so much emphasis on being outside of the home as opposed to being at home with yeah. kids. Like it's not a waste of talent to be at home with your children. In fact, it's very much a sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the hardest thing
mm-hmm.
I've ever done and the most rewarding. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine doing anything else right now, really.
Mm-hmm. It's a good plug for being mom.
It is. It is a good plug in that sense because, but you're going to have like anywhere, you're going to have those good days and bad days. Mm-hmm. Like you're going to have the days where the kids scream constantly like Max is doing.
I know we can't hear him. Don't worry. He's down there in the
player. He's okay.
I think he's okay. Oh, wait, there he goes again.
There he is.
Okay, so we're back after a little break with Miss Ashley.
Hi.
We started out. Hi, Ashley. How are you today?
I'm good. A little tired, but we're good.
Yeah. I know, right? It takes 2 days for busy moms to make a podcast.
You know, I saw that too. I was like, how do we even remember?
So let's go from there. What do you want to share about Hannah's pregnancy, or do you want to move on to the second pregnancy, or what do you want to tell us?
You know, Hannah's pregnancy was, you know, relatively smooth sailing. I had a really stressful job at the time, and I was a project manager for a very small, like clothing brand, and really crazy hours, and it just wasn't conducive to pregnancy, to family life. And so at that point, we made a decision for me to quit my job because then we thought about it. Childcare is so expensive. We had no idea at that point what we were going to do until we actually really prayed about that step. And I knew I had to quit my job, but you know, that's a really precarious position to be in when you're 7 months pregnant. And thankfully we were on Adam's insurance and just wondering, okay, you know, obviously I can't get a job right now because of maternity leave. It just wouldn't make any sense for anybody to hire me at that point. So we really thought and prayed about it. And, I was talking to my sister about all these issues and we still had to pay for my adoptive daughter, Denai's, school that semester too.
Really encouraging for people who are praying for something. They're like, wow, I'm going to pray. Well, I get $10,000.
I feel like it's always like God gives you enough, right? Like God gives you what you need in those moments. You just have to be willing to look for it. I think the biggest thing about that is you have to be willing to turn to God in those moments where, okay, God, whatever you will at this point. And that journey of that last couple months in pregnancy, it was really rough overall because I was really having a hard time reconciling who I was outside of work. You know, what was my exact identity? And I really, really, really struggled with that. I actually entered into counseling because I was just having such a hard time. And I'm diagnosed with anxiety, depression in general. And, you know, so a situation like that where you don't know where you're going at a certain point, and after society tells you for so long that you have to have these big lofty goals for yourself, it was really hard to surrender to this new identity and sense of self, because I wasn't sure. Prior to that, I never would have seen myself as a stay-at-home mom, because I never felt like I had the temperament to sit still. But in reality, being a stay-at-home mom is not about being still. It's not about there's not a quietness to it. There's not a meekness to it. It truly takes strength to be a stay-at-home mom. And I don't think I ever really appreciated that before.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you hadn't been one. So how would you know?
Yes.
It's so funny you say that, because I'm like, wow, you're like the epitome of stay-at-home mom. Like, I mean, not that that's like all I see you as, but that's the type of person mom, I see you as. And so,
yeah. Oh, and I think you have to embrace the role. And I think one of the biggest things that I learned during that time is I read St. Therese of Lisieux's autobiography. And it really, really helped me adjusting into that role and into motherhood in a way, because it was a lot about littleness and being humble. And I personally love stories of saints where they're just like us, a sense of, you know, being anxious and being worried.
She's human.
And I think being a mother has helped me in so many ways in my faith to relate more to other people, to be a little bit more sensitive and caring, and also be willing to ask for help, because that's such a hard thing to do. And I think so many young mothers struggle with that. Like, that's like probably the biggest lesson that I learned, is that you have to set your pride aside. You know, when somebody pees on you for the third or fourth time that day, your pride goes out the window.
Oh, that's funny.
You just got to tuck it away.
Here we are. You've been married, 10 years. And you had an adopted daughter, and then find yourself pregnant. And then 3 kids in 5 years, right?
Yeah. So 3 kids in about 5 years, but I did have 4 pregnancies. So we lost a baby in between Hannah and our son Max. And we lost that baby right at the beginning of COVID. Unfortunately, lost her as a missed miscarriage when she was around 10 weeks. And we say she, not because necessarily we knew the gender specifically, but I've always felt it was a girl. It was really such, you know, it's amazing with grief and sometimes with tragedy like that, a loss of a young life. There's so much grace in those moments, and truly coming together, and just, you know, we felt so loved by our community, and our church really had a hemorrhage that I had to be hospitalized for. And it was pretty severe. I had to have an emergency DNC, stayed overnight, lost over 2 liters of blood. It was pretty challenging. You know, that process of healing afterwards was hard, but I feel like we, you know, did a lot of growth, especially Adam and I as a couple, being able to talk about our feelings and mourn the loss of our child. That really helped the grieving process, along with, of course, being able to bury the baby. And a lot of times, and I'm not sure if you've ever experienced this too, but after like a loss like that, you tend to want to like, okay, I want to become pregnant again, like super quick. Here we go, you know? And because it's like you were, I guess, in baby mode and now you want to continue that. You know, after a few months, probably about 4 or 5 months after that, I was like, you know, this isn't healthy for me to be in that mindset, because then every month I'm disappointed when I get my period. I just need to stop and let it go. You know, whatever comes of this will come of it. One of the things I started to do too was to pray with my daughters, both of my girls, every night, in our prayers, inserting our, the child we lost, praying for her and having her hopefully pray for us. And, once I did that, I found out that I was pregnant with my son, Max, and Max is our rainbow baby. I fully believe that our little saint in heaven is totally responsible for, you know, the gift that is him. Certain precautions that they didn't necessarily do when I was pregnant with Hannah to help me keep Max, and it worked. And it was amazing. You know, but it's every day still in the back of your mind. You're like, okay, God, you know, can you help me keep this baby? You know, it really wasn't until like somewhere in the mid second trimester that I started to be able to breathe a little bit easier about things. But Max, he was born in May of 2021, and he was actually, I went into full blown labor with him, and I didn't do that with Hannah. She was a C-section, and Max was also a C-section, but he was an emergency C-section at 37 weeks. Yeah. So I went into labor. The reason why, I think, is somewhere along the lines, he got stressed and pooped inside. And so he released that meconium. And then when he was, when they were bringing him out, he was breathing that in and he aspirated it into his lungs. Which is kind of like the equivalent of a baby getting pneumonia, really young, you know, their lungs aren't working well. He had to be put on full rounds of antibiotics. He was on different breathing apparatuses. He had, a feeding tube inserted. But I will say within 24 hours, he completely removed all of his CPAP by himself. Like he moved all of that stuff off of himself. It was the same when he had his surgery this past year, because he was born with some issues with a tethered cord in his back, and he had to have spinal surgery to get that removed, which was impeding his gross motor skills. And he ripped off all of his electrodes within the first 24 hours. And so it's always been a joke that he's just like, okay, I know what I need. Once he overcomes something, he's just unstoppable. And I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, his personality, but also we named him after St. Maximilian Kolbe, and who is such a strong saint to begin with, you know, especially given his background and role in the Holocaust as a prisoner of the Nazis. And you know, if anybody who's out there listening has not heard about St. Maximilian Kolbe, definitely read his story, because it's truly inspiring. When I was pregnant with Hannah, Father Patrick Anderson, he knew that if we had a son, we were going to name him Maximilian. And so he saw me the one day and said to me, he's like, hold on, wait a minute, you know, and we were at church, and he runs back to the rectory, comes back, And he hands me this, this necklace, and there's like a charm at the end of the necklace. Inside was a second class relic of Saint Maximilian Kolbe. And, he actually let me, wear that for the duration of my pregnancy with Hannah and up to her baptism.
How many people can say that?
I know. I wore that. I wore it every day too.
Yeah. Two little kids is a lot. And then all of a sudden there were three.
And then there were three. So when Max was about 5 months old, he decided that he was through with the breastfeeding point. You know, I'd already had a period after Max, and I got it like right around 4 months. And I remember, like, as the weeks progressed, and I'm thinking, when was the last time I had my period? I might be pregnant. But, you know, it's kind of like you were in denial about it. And you're like, I can't possibly be pregnant, even though I haven't had my period for like 2 months.
Well, your brain was so used to the infertility story.
It was. It really and truly was. It was
forgot so that, you know, if you're healthy and fertile, and you have sex and ovulating, you're going to get pregnant.
But yes.
You're used to that not happening.
If you think about it. And to me, pregnancy and childbirth has been an experience where it's like, how can you not see God in those moments of that? Like, it's just such a proof of something bigger than us. And I truly think the most amazing thing is that, you know, as women, we are co-creators with God and our bodies do so many amazing things, making these little people. You are an angry elf. There we go. We got a bottle. We're good. But we become this co-creator with God, and it's just a truly humbling experience. Kids really, 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 really make you humble and look at things, I think, a little bit differently than what you would. And hopefully in some people's cases, make them see how God really wants the best for them. And in a lot of ways too, I've, you know, gotten a new perspective of how God must feel about when we do something we shouldn't do. Like you're trying to get your kid down for a nap, you know they need a nap, and they just won't do it. And it's like, God, how can you not do the thing that's good for you? And then I sit there and I'm like, oh, right. Sorry about that, God. You must think the same thing about me.
Yeah, that's very insightful and very true. Yeah, our kids show us a lot about ourselves.
Oh, they do.
Yeah.
Like this is your way of showing me what I need to work on too. Okay, I get it.
Well,
I've got a lot of work.
A beautiful story. And I really appreciate that you're so open to sharing it and all the inside thoughts and feelings you had while going through everything. It's really wonderful. I know it'll bless many moms who have been blessed by adoption. You've been blessed with a lot of little ones who also are struggling with infertility because you've been through it all, Ashley. How do you handle the comment, got your hands full, since that is the title of my podcast?
Anything you want to say about that?
It's such a fitting thing. And when you and I were talking about it the other day, like it just truly encapsulates motherhood. And it's a phrase I've actually heard even well before having my own kids. I now have two dogs, but when I had three dogs before kids, I would take them on a walk and I would take all three together. And they were big dogs, gentle giants, but big dogs who were just excited, like overly excited to be out and about. And I would have people pulling their car over and like making the point literally on my walk to pull their car over and make that comment.
Oh my God.
Oh boy. Oh yeah. And it would just get me so irritated because I'm like, no, you think?
Well, now I feel better because people do go out of their way to tell me that about my kids. But I guess it's when people have this feeling to just spurt out whatever they're thinking, I guess they'll do it even with dogs. So I guess I do feel better.
Yeah. Really has made me think, especially now when I go to the store and I have all three of them with me, they're going to have moments where they're going to scream. You know that. You've been there. Just that comment, when people say it, I feel like it's a pity comment. You know, it's definitely a pity comment. Like they just don't know what else to say. And I'm so tempted in those moments to turn to them and say, would you like to take one? Here. I would love to have some extra help. And there have been the kind souls at the grocery store or wherever we are that would actually come up and say something, you know, helpful.
You know, we still have to remind ourselves as parents, I think, that when our kids act out in these moments, they're not perfect. They have feelings and emotions too, that are going to, in their age, dictate how they react to things. And there's a certain level of patience that we need for that and empathy.
And you always do a great job of that. You guys have helped us out so many different times, whether it be, you know, letting Adam and I actually have a dinner without children or giving us, you know, as a family, like a social space. And that's just really so important. And I know that you and Mark work really hard to do that and to build community. And it's so appreciated.
Oh, thank you. Hey, you had my kid for a whole weekend. Well, thank you for sharing your story. I really appreciate it. Thank you for all that you've done for Denai and being open to life and witness and your faith. So yeah, I'm so excited that everyone can hear your story. So thanks, Ashley.
You're welcome. And thank you for having me on here. It was a lot of fun to kind of reminisce on these old points and things and makes me think about things a little bit deeper too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can always learn more the more we tell our stories. So
yes.
Thank you for sharing. God bless you. Bye-bye.
God bless you too, Lauren. Talk to you later. Bye.
I'm sure I'll see you soon.
Yes, I know, right? We'll see each other soon. I don't even know what the next event is, but I know I'm sure it's coming up here.
Probably this weekend, yes.